You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Well, hello, Launch Street. I am super excited for today. I have known this woman for a long time, and I finally got her on my show. So we are here today with Maureen Berkner-Boyd. She is the founder of the Moxie Exchange Movement, a training and mentoring organization for companies who want to develop, promote, and retain women and create inclusive workplaces. She is a lifelong enthusiast of leadership, business, and success. She's been an advisor and executive coach to CEOs of the nation's fastest growing companies, has held leadership positions in several large corporations, and is the founder of five successful businesses and counting of her own. She spent over 20 years helping organizations grow by combining smart strategy with amazing talent. Maureen holds a master's in organizational development, is a graduate of Corporate Coach U, and reads anything she can get her hands on about business and leadership. She's the author of five book series, Rock Your Moxie, Power Moves for Women Leading the Way. Mo has lived her life as a doer and a risk taker too. I know her personally, so I know that's true. She's ridden camels in the Sahara Desert. Oh my God. Jumped in the fairy pools in the Isle of Skye and completed 2 36-hour ultra team runs. We're going to have to talk about why you did it more than once, why you went back. She brings those experiences and approach to her work, getting people to think big, take action, and move the dial on driving results for themselves and their teams. Mo, it is so good to have you on today.
Oh, I am completely psyched to be here. I love the Launch Street community and everything that you're doing, and I'm really excited to play.
So am I. So let's dig in. So I want to talk kind of big scale for a second and talk about why we should care about diversity and inclusion. Because, you know, I'm hearing this word, this phrase a lot, but, you know, it's not just warm and fuzzy, right? How does it actually impact business?
Yeah, I think, I think that's probably one of the biggest illusions people have. It's like, oh, well, this is just nice to have, you know, it's like babies and puppies and kittens. And in fact, companies that have built an inclusive environment and have diverse teams are beating the pants off those that are led by what we fondly sometimes say is pale, male, and stale.
So I've worked for those companies. I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's everything from a higher team IQ, higher profit, return on sales. But in the case of innovation, greater numbers of patents and market share. Wow. I mean, really, virtually every measure, diverse teams are outperforming.
So I'm going to ask the really naive question, which is why? Why does that get to those results?
There's a I've got to remember this guy's name at some point in time. He's a VC out in California, and he said, you know, stop asking me for the business case on diversity and inclusion. Like, this is just common sense. And when you think about it, it is common sense. You know, if we are building a team, building a product or a service, and we're looking at it from a multitude of angles, and people are bringing their backgrounds, their experiences, of course, those are going to be better if that's diverse versus, hey, we're, you know, we all kind of grew up the same way. We have the same backgrounds. We'll ask the same questions. We'll come to pretty close to the same conclusions. So, you know, if you think about the teams that you've been on, and when it is a group that comes from these different places, people will ask you questions. You'll think, God, I never would have thought of that.
Mm. You know, diversity and inclusion is interesting, and I love what you're saying about it. It really is just common sense, right? You've got different perspectives, different people, different ideas. And I think in innovation, you know, we talk a lot about collaboration, but oftentimes what hinders it is, you know, collaboration among the same people with the same perspective, yep, looking at the information in the same way. So if I'm hearing you right, there's a huge benefit to innovation, you know, kind of our focus, not just business in general, but specifically innovation and how you tackle challenges and opportunities.
Yes, absolutely. Again, it's that, think about those times when somebody has approached something or asked you a question that you really, like, I never would have thought of that. Like, I would have missed that.
So one of the things that you talk about is unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, I think it's the big, and I don't want to say elephant in the room, it's the big factor in why we end up with organizations that look a lot like us. And when I say a lot like us, we tend to build teams and organizations of people that we share like me bias with. Our brain is an organ, and one of the things that it has to do is very quickly sort through the millions of bits of information that are coming at us every day. And unconscious bias is a way for our brain to filter. You know, without us having unconscious bias, we would actually be like curled up in a ball sucking our sucking our thumbs.
I can't handle the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But what ends up happening is that's based on flawed data. We form our biases culturally when our little baby brains can't tell what's right and wrong. And so we have everything from parenting to media, cultural norms, and we bake those into our brains, and then very quickly, without even realizing how we're making decisions and how we're filtering and sorting, that happens, but 9 times out of 10, it's wrong. It's the way our brain functions, and I always say the software's got a glitch. So we need to interrupt that bias and be asking some real questions and putting systems and practices in place to interrupt the bias, because left to its own devices, again, we're going to end up with a group that looks a lot like us.
So will you give me an example of, because I bet it's hard for us as individuals to even see when we're doing it, since to your point, it's so unconscious. Will you give me some examples of things that kind of show that we do that on a day-to-day basis without even realizing it?
Yeah, I think the exciting thing right now is there's so much research happening. If people go to Harvard Implicit Association Test, they have had over 13 million people that have taken the test around women and men and leadership and home. 80% of people that take that test have an association for men at work and women at home.
Wow.
And that's myself included. This is the work that I do, yet I hold this unconscious bias. And it's showing up from everything. If you have two resumes and they have it's the exact same resume and you change it from John Smith to Jill Smith. John Smith is more qualified. He should make $13,000 more a year. Jill probably isn't even going to get the interview.
So I don't know how long this little experiment went on, but I don't know if you saw that. I saw it on Facebook, which, you know, of course, is the end all be all truth and everything. But, you know, it was basically a man and a woman in office, and they decided to swap names on their emails.
Yes.
To see the response. And the difference was drastic in terms of how people responded back to both of them when they used, you know, female versus male names on their emails. It was incredible.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I saw a response to that that was like, oh yeah, you know, we had to have a white guy telling us what we've been telling us forever, right? That we've been trying to say. And I mean, it is truly, it's everything from who gets interviewed, who gets on a team, who gets invited to the client meeting. And again, nobody is doing this on purpose. I think that's the thing that we want to keep in mind here. When we're talking about building inclusive teams and building diversity, it is not about taking something away from white men. Instead, it's about creating that atmosphere where everybody gets that benefit of the doubt and everybody is set up to succeed in the same way. It's not right, and it's not pie. It's not like there's only so much to go around. So when we think about wanting inclusion, it's about, again, setting up a place where everybody thrives.
So help me understand what to do in this situation, because what you're saying is so fascinating. I'm thinking about a client of mine who has a team, and I'd say they're probably not the most diverse team. It's, you know, everyone who works there is kind of comes from the same background, the same cloth, more or less. I think it's men and women, but generally the same backgrounds. What do I do if I'm the leader of that team to get them out of that bias? Because, you know, if I hear you right, and I think the conversations you and I have had offline many times about this is it really hinders ideation and getting those disruptive ideas. And in fact, as it sounds like a little bit of a tangent, but I'll bring it back. You know, a lot of the most disruptive businesses that we think out there, whether that's, you know, the Uber or Dollar Shave Clubs or Infinite Monkey or Urban Winery here or Spanx or, you know, Little Mismatched Socks, were people who kind of got out of the bias and the assumptions of their day to day.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm a leader of a team. Like, I get it for hiring, but I've got my team. What do I do to just help push past some of that bias that we have?
Well, so the first thing is to understand that knowing is not enough. And I think that's the trap. There's, you know, we've seen so much conversation about this recently with, you know, Sheryl Sandberg and Lean In, a lot of the tech companies releasing their diversity data. And the problem where I would say we're sort of stuck in the mud is everybody thinks, oh, let's just let everybody know about unconscious bias. Let's send them through some training and that's going to fix the problem. That is akin to saying I was a diabetic and I would go and I would do research on my pancreas and find out why it's not secreting insulin correctly and then saying, okay, now do it right.
Right. Yeah. No,
it's the same thing with our, yeah, right. It's the same thing with our brain. It's the way it functions. So awareness is a step and a start. And then you actually have to put systemic bias interrupters in place. We've identified more than 20 of them. There are some that are, all of this I say is simple, but not easy. So for example, if I'm a leader and I know that my team is going to outperform if it's diverse, I need to say, hey, we're not going to have that idea jam until there's some diversity sitting around this table. Mm. That means I have to go and seek it. It's likely not going to be the first people that I think of. There are a million reasons why women don't think they're qualified to be on that team. In the Asian culture, there's something where here in the West, we say the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Right.
In Asian cultures, it's the loudest duck gets shot.
Oh.
So if
wow.
you were, right, it's... So it's as a leader saying, we have to say, I'm not going to start X, Y, or Z until I see backgrounds that look different. And that takes some persistence. It takes some patience. It takes overcoming like me bias, which is one of our strongest biases, right? I know, yeah. like, and trust people, again, without realizing I'm doing it, who look like me, who act like me. And so, things as simple as, wow, if I find out that somebody went to University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is where I got my undergrad, without recognizing it, I already think they're great. Right? Because I went to school there, so, you know, they must be smart, just like me, that, you know, that kind of like me bias. So I would say there's a patience to it, and not probably the biggest bias interrupter is saying we're not going to take another step until I see some diversity.
I want to dig a little bit into women in particular because, well, two reasons. One is I recently saw you speak at HR Disrupt Conference, which was phenomenal, and you rocked the house, and they were so into it and taking notes and hooting and hollering at the same time. I didn't know that was possible. And... you've got these great leadership programs and online training and tools programs that I know make a difference. So will you share some of the top tools, maybe some of the ones that your clients, some of those video tools that you have that some of your clients go, those little things for women in particular, trying to have a voice and move up the ranks, and for leaders trying to make sure their women are seen and heard and given the right opportunities, because that is absolutely a part of diversity and inclusion, kind of what some of those tools are, or what some of those, I don't want to call them tricks because that's not right, but
yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, sure. There are three that come to mind. And the first is there's really a secret sauce to getting into leadership, and that is having a sponsor. Mm. A sponsor is a mentor on steroids. They are advocating for you, for your career. They're opening doors for you. They're putting your name in the hat. Your brands are really connected. Men have 4 times more sponsors than women. And that's for 3 different reasons. The first is that women think it's cheating, right? We think, oh, I got to do it myself or die trying. So we need to educate women that having a sponsor is absolutely not cheating. It is a part of the rules and the way the game is played. The second is like me bias, like we talked about. So we have to educate white male leaders that, hey, they're going to have to sponsor somebody that doesn't look like them.
Yeah.
And the third is we have to talk about sex. And usually, well, if there are HR people listening to this, like, they fall on the floor. Like, oh my God, I can't believe she just said that.
Run away.
Right. It's more that we have to talk about the implication of sex. Men don't want to sponsor younger women because they don't want people to think they're having an affair.
Yeah.
Younger women don't want to be sponsored by older men because they don't want people thinking they've slept their way to the top. totally makes sense. But when we talk about it as an organization and say, hey, listen, this is about sponsorship. These relationships are going to happen in the organization. It's critical to our success. It is like a light switch. It gives everybody permission, and it takes all of that kind of underground chatter and worry away. So I would say sponsorship is one. The second is to have rules of inclusive teams. And rules of inclusive teams look like this. We know from research that women are interrupted more and speak less in meetings. So we need to have the rules of inclusive teams, which are there are no interruptions, and we have to give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. So if a woman comes up with an idea, she might frame it as a question. You know, hey, have we thought about doing this? Or I think the product would be better if XYZ. And because she's framed it as a question, the chatter goes on. And 10 minutes later, Bob says, hey, I think we should do XYZ. And everyone goes, Bob, that's brilliant. Right? So the rules of inclusive teams are you make sure that credit goes where credit is due. So somebody around that table, and it gives permission to the woman that said that originally to say, hey, Bob, just want to bring it back. I brought that up 10 minutes ago, and it's okay with the team that she does that. It makes it socially acceptable. And the third is at equal airtime. So there's no interruptions and everybody's got to speak. So those rules of inclusive teams, and actually there's one more, and that is everybody shares with the office housework and the note-taking. We expect women to be helpful, and we expect them to take the notes. It's really hard to fully participate if you're the one that is sitting there, you know, typing away. And it puts you in more kind of an executive assistant role than a fully participating team member. So in inclusive teams, they just say, hey, we're just going to rotate that. It's not I'm going to volunteer. And it's the same thing for helping set up the company picnic or the, you know, pumpkin carving or whatever it might be. Everybody chips in and it's on a rotating schedule.
So what I appreciate about the three that you just shared is that they're in some ways small, but at the same time, very powerful things.
Yes.
Kind of like you said, it's like they're simple, but not easy ways to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I'll have, I always say that this is like death by a million paper cuts. Any one of these things isn't a big deal, but all of them together and women and diverse employees feel like they're fighting a headwind all the time. And it causes them to take the off ramp. So I think it's, this setting it up again so everybody has that tailwind that white males have in, again, in Western culture business is really helpful.
Well, and you know, I think when it comes to a competitive advantage, having an inclusive workplace where everybody has a voice and it's done in a myriad of ways. I mean, I was laughing. I was on a call just before I got on here and we were talking about this innovation panel. And I was saying, well, we need to have some other ways of engaging because not everybody is an extrovert like me. And
right.
It's kind of in a way, it's kind of the same thing of saying we've got to make sure everybody has a voice and it's going to be a little bit different for everybody, but we've got to make sure to include everyone in that voice as well. And it's funny when you're talking about sponsorship, I was laughing because in my early career, I had a couple sponsors. I didn't know that's what they were at the time. I got very lucky.
Yeah.
And that's why I was able to move so quickly and get promoted so fast was because of the sponsors. It wasn't my work. There were a million of us doing great work. It was actually because they made sure it happened. And I didn't see that at the time because I was 22 and didn't realize what was happening.
Right, right.
But they were a big reason why that happened. I want you to, if you wouldn't mind sharing, there's a fourth one that I really appreciate, which makes me laugh every time I hear it because I do it. And that's the whole thank you dilemma.
Yeah. So we need to teach women that having a sponsor is a part of the rules of the game. The other thing that we need to do is teach women to take credit for their work.
Yeah.
So, I want you to watch for the next, you know, week and watch how women respond when somebody tells them, hey, great job on that project or good job. They're going to say one of three things. Oh, it was nothing. Oh, it was the team. I've been really lucky.
I said all three of those in one sentence,
I think. Yeah, right? And it's so true. And we need to teach women, and there's all kinds of social conditioning around this. We need to teach women to simply say, thank you.
Yeah.
And that is a full response. And they can also, if they feel compelled, and I've had women, it's like, I just can't leave it at that. I'm like, okay, great. Then say, thank you. You know, I had a really great team and they were really supportive. And here's what I contributed and what I'm really proud of and how that positions me for what's next.
It is funny to me how uncomfortable something as simple as saying thank you can be. So I tried this out on myself. I'm happy to know because oh my God, thank you so much. I have a great team. It was really all them.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't me. I'm just here. They did all the work, but thank you. I'm horrible at that. And the other day someone gave me credit for something, gave me a compliment and I said, thank you. And that's it. And then I stopped myself and I felt so awkward, but it was very powerful. And what I came to realize was that first of all, I'd earned it and I should say thank you. I should just say thank you. And second, the person on the other end wasn't expecting me to divert. So there was no,
right.
You know, we're so worried about the person on the other end judging us for being too cocky, you know, there's so much baggage around that as well.
Yeah. Again, there's a ton of social conditioning.
Yeah.
And it is, if we can teach women those two things to the importance of sponsorship and positioning for sponsor and taking credit for their work. And is that we really do have to oftentimes reach down and say to women, you're ready. Women suffer from imposter syndrome and thinking they're not prepared, thinking they are, if I just get this experience or this next thing, you know, we read the job description and if we don't have it all, we don't go for it. You know, same thing for promotions or it can be as simple as, you know, asking to go to a conference or get some training. You know, I'm just not ready yet. Somebody else deserves that more than I do. So as leaders, if you really want to build diversity and inclusion, you're going to have to take a second look for talent. Because she's not going to have accepted credit for her work, and she's also not throwing her hat in the ring. So you're going to have to reach down and say, hey, listen, there are some opportunities that are popping up here. You're ready. I'm not saying you're going to get them, but I want to see your name in the hat.
Do you think
that encouragement that's really important.
I'm not sure how to ask this, so bear with me as I fumble a little bit. But as you're talking about this, it's kind of percolating in my head. Do you think, you know, with the kind of, and I hate using all the generational stuff. It kind of drives me crazy, but the millennials are such a big part of the workforce now, just from an age. And they're growing up in a more of an even playing field on a lot of ways. Also in business, in terms of what's possible on a low budget and getting into markets and starting your own business and leadership. And, you know, it's a much more even playing field for them. Do you think that there is for companies out there who are, you know, they're talking about how do we recruit millennials and keep millennials, right, in the workplace. And people of that more, I don't know if progressive is the right word, but of that kind of attitude and mindset, it seems to me that there's also a huge just competitive business advantage to being inclusive and diverse and having that in mind. There must be a little bit of conflict between, you know, this kind of rise of the generation and this kind of old school way of doing business. I'm not sure how to ask this, so just bear with me, but that's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
So the first thing that I want to dispel there is this idea that millennials don't have unconscious bias. So, and in fact, the Harvard Implicit Association test shows that they lean even more strongly toward men at work and women at home. My generation, I'm an X, my generation was the one where this was supposed to be fixed.
Yeah, we just got squeezed out is what we did.
Well, this really goes back to Tamara, to how important it is to understand the impact of unconscious bias.
Because
it isn't going to change on its own, unfortunately. Again, it's the way our brain functions, and we're seeing it even more strongly in millennials. So
I would not have guessed that. That's interesting.
I know, right? And I think that's where people, again, I think if you looked back and when I was hitting the workforce and when you were hitting the workforce, right, it was again, oh, this generation is going to take care of it. All these women, they blazed the trail for us. They knocked down all these barriers. But because of the way our brain works, we bake unconscious bias into our talent management practices. So it doesn't, it's not going to change without an interruption.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm a business owner. I want to interrupt it. What's the first thing I should do to make sure that happens? Because it's a longer play, right?
Yeah. Well, there are two things. The first one is to get rid of the excuse, this is a male-dominated industry.
Yeah. I hear that a lot in innovation.
Everybody says it in every single industry. And, you know, people say, oh, well, the only places where it doesn't, where it's not male dominated are nursing and teaching. Well, that's great. Take a look at who are the leaders in healthcare and education, men. Yeah. So it's not a matter of how many people you have coming in the pipeline. It is a way of doing business. So I have a friend that every time we get together, she is moaning and complaining about the 10 pounds she has to lose, but then she orders prosciutto wrap mozzarella and eats chocolate cake.
Wait, are you talking about me? No, I'm kidding.
So it's always her actions aren't in alignment with what she wants for results. The same is true about being an inclusive place to work. It's everything. It's the little things like we talked about, the rules of inclusive teams, hiring practices. It's every day showing up. How do we recognize and reward people? Always thinking about what's best for us versus a narrow slice that looks like me. And that's like staying fit. Like there are days I don't want to do my sit-ups and I want to sit on the couch and eat Cheetos. But if I want to be able to go and hike and spend and, you know, do things with my kids and keep up with them, I have to do the sit-ups and you know, eat the kale salad. So some of it is once it becomes habit and a way of being, leading a healthy lifestyle isn't necessarily hard. There are some choices now and again that are hard. It's the same with being inclusive. Once you figure out and put in place these bias interrupters and have a deep commitment, and you see that start to see the results and how awesome it is working on teams like this, it becomes worth it when you do have those moments where you have to make the tougher, you know, oh, we have to be really patient. We're not going to start with the hiring until we've got 25% in the talent pool. So I think that's a piece of it is understanding, getting rid of that excuse about male-dominated industry, simply not true. Instead, it's, hey, we are a company that's inclusive. And then building in and understanding and holding people accountable to putting bias interrupters in place.
Well, and the other thing that I want to loop back to that I think is really important that you said in the beginning is recognizing this is not a pie where if you're inclusive here, you're taking away from somebody else.
No, everybody. Here. I mean, it's so exciting when you think about being on these teams that are more innovative and, you know, more patents, more market share, more money. You know, gosh, who doesn't want 2% more profitability to play with in their company?
I mean, I would take it.
Yeah, yeah. So when you get this right, it's both a strategic competitive advantage and a strategic imperative, right? When we look at what's happening with the baby boomers leaving the workplace.
Yeah.
So it really is everybody being in this great, cool environment where people can show up as their authentic selves and bring that to the team.
So let's talk a little bit about how, in particular, the lack of diversity inclusion, you know, the unconscious bias, all of that shows up in innovation in particular. So whether I'm a small business or a team in a large company or even an entrepreneur, and I'm trying to, you know, get that next competitive advantage in the marketplace, how does this hinder that?
Yeah. So there's this great phrase, shrink it and pink it. You know, if you've got a group of guys that are trying to create product or service for women and they don't engage them in that process, right? It's going to be, well, let's just make it smaller and pink and it'll work just fine. And then they wonder, you know, why the product over there that doesn't look like theirs is gaining more market share. I think there's a hilarious example recently when Apple released the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And they were touting it as like this amazing, like it can track all your healthcare and, you know, you're barely going to need a doctor because your Apple Watch is giving you all this biofeedback, blah, 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 blah. Well, 50% of the population has something happen once a month, right? There was nothing in the Apple Watch, not a thing that acknowledged that.
That's hysterical.
Right? That's a good example of when you have a group of guys that are trying to create a product that doesn't encompass 50% of the population's experience.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of like years ago, I'm going to throw PepsiCo under the bus. This was in the early mid 90s. I was working brand strategy in New York, and I was working with Pepsi, and I was the only Gen Xer in the room. At that time, we were the young ones, you know, in the workforce.
Yep.
And I was in a room of everybody was easily 55 plus talking about how to market to young people. And they wouldn't listen to me. And they kept bantering around ideas. And I was just sitting there thinking to myself, why are there not other people in this room? I mean, why are we having this conversation when, you know, everybody in this room is above 55? Like, I'm just there taking notes. I'm like brand new in my career, you know, barely had a voice. But it was the same kind of thing of like, you're not even listening to a group of people that are part of this conversation.
Well, and I think there's a psychologist, Lee Brosnan, who calls this naive realism. We perceive the world as real, but we've done all this crazy spinning through our own experience and bias filters that, you know, they were sitting in that room thinking that they didn't understand how much they'd already spun.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other thing is we really have to stay. If you can't get diversity in the room, you at least have to stay curious. And you have to be asking yourself, what is the bias here? And what else could be true? And put yourself in say, let's say I were a woman of color. How might I be thinking about this? Let's say I were somebody in a wheelchair. How might I engage with this product or service? And if you can't for real get the diversity in the room, you got to pretend.
Right? Yeah. Well, and you had said to me at one point, you know, what else could be true?
Yes.
And, you know, if I were to play devil's advocate on this, what would be true or what would be something I would think, which I think are great ways to just do that in yourself. You can't always get all the right people in the room. So I love what you were saying about like, here are ways to get out of your own way a little bit too.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, asking, hey, why would this fail? Or why might X group hate this? Or how is this not meeting their needs?
Mm.
So go to the negative side of why this product or service won't work for a certain group.
Let's flip it for a second. Do you have an example of an organization that you think is doing it absolutely right, or at least on the right path, and kind of how that's showing up in the marketplace for them?
Yeah, there are two actually in wildly different industries. One is Moss Adams. They are a public accounting firm on the West Coast. They took a look about 15 years ago and said, who's coming out of school getting with accounting and finance degrees and getting their CPA, more women than men.
Wow.
And then they took a look at who their partners were, more men than women. And they had some really aggressive growth goals. And they said, if we don't figure out how to get women on the partnership track and into partnership, we're not going to be able to grow. So they have had a long and deep commitment, and they have more female partners than any CPA firm in the country.
Oh, impressive.
And they have grown like wildfire. The same is true of WP Engine. They're a web hosting for WordPress sites. They are a really young company, and they, again, are growing like wildfire. And what's interesting about WP Engine is it's everything from at least half their leadership team are women, but they also say, we don't care if you've gotten a degree. So they're looking at different backgrounds. They're saying, we can train people on the tech side of things or the marketing side of things. We want kind of this esprit de corps in terms of what are people's values and will they fit in here? And we don't care, you know, degree doesn't mean anything to us. So they're really reaching and looking at different backgrounds. And they're having, again, this really, they're starting to dominate in that space and incredibly fast growth.
I love it when humanity, the right thing to do, and common sense meet with business.
Yes, right?
So exciting. Because I mean, it's funny, like I'm sitting here and I'm almost feeling bad for saying, well, what's the impact of this? But it's wonderful when those two things come together.
Yes. Yeah, it's incredible.
So let's talk a little bit about, because we're kind of in our closing time, what you do and how you do it. Because you and I have had many wine glasses conversations about, you know, people... not intentionally, but often give this type of topic. They do the same thing with innovation, lip service. You know, the leadership stands up and they've taken some classes and they've said, we're going to be more diverse, inclusive. We're going to, you know, overcome our bias. We are going to work on this. But then they really fall short with programs and tools. And I feel the same way in innovation. You can tell people to be innovative and that's fine. But if you don't back it up with resources, you're not, everybody fails together, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about your programs and what you do and how that works, because I think it's important for people to understand that this really does go beyond the town hall meeting or the email or the video, you know, check-in with people.
Yeah. We say that we hit the problem from both sides. So we have resources and tools and programs for women in particular, and those can be expanded to other diverse employee groups to say, hey, we're going to teach you how to take credit for your work. We're going to teach you about sponsors and mentors and how that works. So we have online workshops. We also have some micro-learning courses. And then we have a very robust peer mentoring program, where it's bringing together women from, you know, different departments, different parts of organizations, where they can be a part of a mastermind group and really move forward. So, and the number one thing that we're hearing from the people that go through our programs is confidence. They are raising their hand and they are stepping forward and really stepping into their leadership.
Well, you know, without kind of reading my text messages, I'll say that Launchery should really pay attention to the people in this community to that. So I brought three colleagues of mine to a keynote that Maureen did before the Women's March a couple months ago. And both of them have implemented things that you talked about and share in those programs that you do. And then, as you know, I got a great text from one of them talking about how she raised her hand in that meeting and spoke up and said thank you without anything else, some of the things that you said, and the impact it had on her career, which was phenomenal. And just, you know, the credit and the validation she got coming out of that meeting from her leadership, which was so great. So the stuff really works. And I think it's important that people go, that people listening to this in Launch Street really think about, how do I go beyond the idea of into the implementation of?
Well, and I think that's half, you know, that's one side of the coin. And we realized, you know, several years back, we said, listen, if the women are leaning into a broken system, nothing changes. Mm. And that's when we really started working with leadership and executive teams saying, here's unconscious bias and here's how you interrupt it. So we also have programs and 20 bias interrupters and a diagnostic where a team can really dig in and say, for our organization, what are the things that we need to implement? And then how are we going to measure it and hold ourselves accountable? Because again, if you look at the business results, it's a little bit of insanity not to have this as one of your strategic priorities on your strategy map, because you just win.
Right.
Right. And so it's creating that, yeah, of course we're going to measure it. People are like, oh, no, we shouldn't measure, you know, do you measure profitability? Do you measure market share? Do you measure, like, all of these things? This is a key performance indicator. So it absolutely should be a part of your strategy. You should be holding people accountable to forward progress and talking about it.
Well, and I think there's something that you kind of said quickly, but is super important for those listening to really pay attention to, which is, it's part of your strategy. It's not just something that lives in training and development or HR or one leadership team who happens to get it. It is part of the overall strategy that is implemented and measured and, you know, improved upon and measured. And that's a big shift for some businesses.
Absolutely. That takes it from the warm and fuzzy to, oh my gosh, if we do this, we're going to make more money. We're going to make more money and we're going to grow and we're going to be able to do cool things. You know, get that next product to market. Gosh, how about not have to lay people off? I mean, there are all kinds, the business reasons behind this are so strong. And I've got some materials if people want those that I'm happy to share around the business case.
So let's do this. Where can people go to find out more about you and or get those materials as well? And we'll make sure to put all the links in the show notes.
Yeah, you bet. So moxieexchange.com. And if people just want to shoot me an email at mo@moxieexchange.com, and in the subject line, just say, send me the goods. And we have a whole toolkit of resources for you, free, you know, a couple that I talked about, the diagnostic, my top three hacks for, you know, your biased brain, bias interrupters, all kinds of good stuff for you.
Oh my gosh, that's so generous. If you're out there, I would absolutely shoot that email off because that I've seen it. It's some good stuff. That is for sure. All right. I feel like you shared this a little bit in your opener, but I know there's more. So what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? It's hard when you're an open book.
I know. I'm like surprised. I think I tell everything. I'm the youngest of four. There were four of us in 6 years. And I used to scream until I fainted to get attention. And apparently my oldest sister, who's super patient, a really kind human being, brought me in. I'd passed out on the street and she brought me in and dumped me on the couch. And she's like, "Mom, we have to do something about her." So I've been speaking my mind since I was very young.
That is fantastic. I'm not even sure what to say to that one. That's so good. Marie, thank you so much for joining today. This has been very insightful, and I'm looking forward to hearing kind of people making some changes in their work and gaining some competitive edge by doing so.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. And just super important, the work that you're doing with Launch Street. Keep it up.
Will do then.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.